taking the pieces of a man, staring at a future in the creases of my hand.
Welcome everyone to the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North lead writer for BleacherReport.com and Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I'm joined this week, like every week, by my co-host Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Brian.
All right.
We're already 3 weeks done here in the 2014 NFL season, if you can believe that already. We're heading into the one quarter mark of the season this week.
Yeah, it's hard to believe
we're already to bye weeks. Yes, six teams on bye in week four, which to me is just crazy to have that many teams take their bye week so early. But you know, the NFL is not in the sense making business, as we've seen over the past few weeks and months and years.
Sense-making is definitely secondary to other objectives.
It's not going to be a crazy show this week. We don't have any guests scheduled. We're just going to talk a little bit about what we saw in week three, what we've been seeing so far this season, and then we'll take a break and come back with our ever-popular week four picks. So
stick around for that
if that's why you're here. Fast forward, I guess, if you want, but I'd prefer you not. Let's start with the Thursday night game last week. Atlanta defeating the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 56-14. That game was 56-0 for a very long. Got up to 56-0 for a while there near the end, before Tampa Bay got some garbage time in Atlanta's backups.
I think the term defeated, you know, it doesn't quite say the story as much as maybe they got pantsed.
Yes, it was it was brutal. I mean, it was completely brutal, and it's hard to even imagine this Tampa Bay team, you know, after Atlanta's pulling starters and going out there and at least scoring two touchdowns, because you know, at what point, you know, at some point your morale's got to be shot, just simply because, I mean, 56-0 on national television is just.
Yeah, I think that's one that we both had correct as far as picks for last week. Definitely what I saw how I saw the game shaping up, although not nearly to that extent. I don't know that anybody would have had them scoring that much or beating them that bad. But I didn't expect a close game.
That was the thing, too. Like, on the pregame, you had all these, like, NFL Network experts, and they were picking the games, and they were all picking Atlanta. But they were, like, picking Atlanta by, like, 3 points, like 24-21. And I'm just like,
everybody saw it within a few points.
I was looking at this, and I was just thinking,
I saw this
to be, you know, shaping up to be a blowout win for Atlanta. I wasn't going to sit here and say, you know, in the fourth quarter, it's going to be 56-0 or whatever. But
that's the thing, is there was.
I just didn't think this was going to be close.
There was nothing about what I saw out of the Bucs the first couple weeks to make me think that they were going to come in and you know, really give Atlanta a run in their first road game of the season.
Yeah,
and
right.
So that, yeah, we definitely saw it right, but like to that extent, I don't know that anybody would have ever picked that they would have beaten them that bad. So. Definitely, you know, there's lots of good things going on in Atlanta right now, and nothing really going on well in Tampa, that new regime. Rough start for Lovie down there.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all kind of thought that the Buccaneers were going to, you know, be a pretty competitive team this year, just because, you know, you put in Lovie and you have McCown, and you have some decent weapons on the receiving end of things, and you know, obviously we were all too optimistic that a transition would be quick and smooth. At this point, McCown's been benched.
He's supposedly hurt.
He's supposedly hurt.
Right.
He's got a thumb issue. But
he's got a thumb.
He's got a thumb. But you know, I think most of us, I wouldn't say everybody obviously, but a bunch of us really missed the mark in thinking that, you know, this would be a competitive team. And it could later on in the season. It takes some time for all these new faces and this new scheme to all come together. So, you know, the second half of the season might be much better for Tampa Bay. But right now,
Yeah, definitely a rough start. And I mean, it feels like they've regressed since after making the change to Lovie and that whole new regime there. And they brought on guys like Michael Johnson and,
but he's had injury issues. He hasn't really been in the lineup much yet. So
yeah, it's not shaping up well for them early here. But, yeah, like you said, it's a long season. There's plenty of time to turn things around, and we'll just have to watch how they progress through the season.
At some point, though, Lovey's going to have to realize that the era of the Tampa 2, that kind of cover 2 defense, is over.
I don't know.
There are instances, of course, when there's an appropriate defensive look, but it's not – It's a thoroughly beatable base defensive scheme
the key there is saying base defensive scheme because like nobody runs just one thing.
Right.
Everybody's
in the nickel.
But yeah, and
everyone's in a sub package like 70-80% of the time.
Right, everybody's in, but even that, like, you know, you can even say you're basing out of a nickel, but you have different looks. I mean, you have to in this day and age in the NFL. So, but yeah, I agree with you that. I think more than anything, it's about being able to execute your scheme. And even I think there is potentially some merit in that a completely well-executed Tampa 2 today, it might not be as effective as it was 10 years ago or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that I think it's
No, I'm not saying that it's completely obsolete, but I'm just saying, yeah, it's definitely not, even when executed well,
right.
can definitely be exploited.
It's certainly not being executed very well right now.
There's also another quarterback change to talk about because of injury, and it didn't happen a moment too soon. Minnesota Vikings quarterback Matt Cassel has multiple broken bones in his foot. He's been placed on season-ending injured reserve. It is Teddy time. For the
Anytime.
Vikings. So that, you know, that's just something to bring up. You know, I didn't catch a lot of that New Orleans-Minnesota game when Teddy did eventually come in. You know, I saw a little bit here and there. Obviously, he's a rookie. Obviously, he wasn't 100% prepared to be playing in that game. So I think we'll have a better idea of where he's at with his development, obviously, when we see him this week.
I kept my eye on it a little bit, especially after he was in, because I was curious to see, you know, what he was going to look like and what they were going to look like with him. And, you know, I saw a few things. There was something to feel okay about. I mean
he's definitely a rookie.
Yeah, oh, obviously. And he's going to be rough, and it's going to take a minute. But, you know, he made some decent plays, and he's obviously got a little bit of scrambling ability. And, you know, he could, you know, potentially do some things there, although it's going to be an uphill battle, especially if they're, you know, if they're going to be without Peterson, which –
It appears that's going to be the case.
That's the case, yeah. For a good
this
period
season.
Of time, if not the whole season, right? So I think that's really going to be the toughest thing for Teddy. I think is the having a running game to complement, just to basically take some of the pressure off of him, because they got Asiata, right? And
yes,
and. McKinnon, I think the
Jerick McKinnon, yeah, and they just worked out. I don't know if they're going to sign him, but they did work out Deion Lewis, who Norv Turner is familiar
sure,
with from,
sure.
from Lewis's time in Cleveland.
And
last
probably
year.
Would have had a bigger role had he not gotten hurt in Cleveland.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Last year, so
absolutely.
Maybe he could end up working out for them, and that could they could turn you know get things going later in the season.
He's a very good change of pace back.
The thing you need to talk about, the thing that needs to be talked about with the Vikings right now. It is not Teddy Bridgewater in my mind. It's their defense because
Mike Zimmer
is already making an effect in that defense, and
you can already tell.
They obviously look dominant defensively in the first game, but I wasn't ready to say anything about that because it was against the Rams, and the Rams were in this weird situation with Sean Hill for a minute, and then someone brand new, and so it was tough to say if that was the Vikings D or the Rams O or maybe a little both, and
right.
I'm thinking it was a little of both more than anything. But after three games now, I mean, I think
that's
think
definitely
I'm,
one of their strengths. Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
I'm ready to say that he's. I mean, and I'm basically saying this in comparison to what they were last year.
Yeah.
And last year they were a sieve, and you know, he's obviously already you know been able to make some headway in turning that defense around and getting into where he wants it to be.
Sure.
So. I think that's probably the most noteworthy thing about the Vikings in my mind right now is that D looks definitely improved, and I'm real interested to see how far he can take that this season at least.
We've also got another rookie quarterback starting. This time, Chad Henne. No, he's not injured. The Jacksonville Jaguars have determined now is the time to start Blake Bortles.
Bortles.
I think it's a smart move. I mean, Jacksonville, you know, they got defeated 44-17 by Indianapolis last week. Obviously, again, Bortles, like Bridgewater, you know, obviously not ready, you know, not ready to start in that game. Definitely look like a rookie. But again, I really like Bortles. I think he has a lot of potential. I'm really curious to see how this Jacksonville offense, you know, shifts and takes shape with the new quarterback. And, you know, might as well get him out there. Henny has good days, but then when he has bad days, they can be pretty bad.
I'll say this. It didn't take long. We saw in the preseason when he was getting an opportunity to come in the game. And, again,
right,
preseason, you don't know what kind of defensive guys they're playing against. You know, it could be, depending on what part of the game, it could be reserves, it could be starters, whatever. So it's, you know, you got to take that with a grain of salt, certainly. But it was just when he would come in the game, there was a little bit more of a spark to the offense. And I'm talking about in the preseason.
Yeah.
We saw the same thing last week. That Henny came out, they put him in roughly halfway through the game or whenever it was. I think it was late second quarter, maybe.
Yeah.
But it was just, you know, immediately things were a little bit peppier, and you know, he's got a good arm. I mean, the kid throws a strong ball. And there's some zip to it. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean?
Sure.
And
absolutely.
I don't know. It something about the Henny led offense is just, it's got this lethargic feeling to it. And when Bortles came in and started directing things, they just had a lot more life to them. And yeah, he threw a pick. He's a rookie. He's going to do that. As long as it doesn't get to be too big an issue, obviously.
Right.
But no, I was impressed with the little bit of time. I mean, obviously they were blown out of the game at that point. They'd already, you know, dug such a hole for themselves. It's hard to say how much Indy was paying attention on defense and whatnot, but you know, or people can make that argument at least. And we'll see. I mean, we'll see this next week. He's going to get a tough test right out of the gate. We'll talk about that later, obviously.
Right.
But against the Chargers on the road, we'll really see quickly, you know, what he's made of. But just based on the early returns, the little flashes I saw in preseason, and after he came in last week, I like what I see. I think that they may have found something there. I liked him coming into this draft more than any of the other quarterbacks, and I was kind of in the minority, I think.
Yeah, the pro Bortles crowd definitely has picked up since the draft, and since we've been able to see him
since he was
do some NFL things.
But yeah, that was they kept their intentions. They kept their cards close. We'll
sure.
say.
Nobody expected it.
They came out of left field with that pick. It was one of the biggest surprises of the draft, I think, and they obviously liked him a lot the whole time. And they saw, you know, similar things to what I saw. There were things that I liked, obviously. And, you know, and I think, the like I said, early returns look pretty good for him. And it'll be fun to watch him continue on and see where he can go.
Let's talk about another quarterback briefly here.
Still have
here.
Issues running the ball, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about another quarterback here real quick, and that's Tom Brady of the New England Patriots. I saw a stat tweeted out by one of my colleagues at Pro Football Focus yesterday. Tom Brady, touchdown Tom, never count him out. Tom Brady has completed only one of his 13 pass attempts that have traveled in the air for 20 or more yards. His deep ball accuracy obviously has taken a huge hit. You know, the Patriots are all, you know, they're running the ball more. They ran the ball a lot last year. They ran the ball a lot in 2012. But now it just seems like a run first, run often team. With Brady, kind of, you know, he's under duress. The offensive line isn't pass protecting very well. We've all known over the years that Tom Brady, you know, if you can rattle him with pressure, which was something you couldn't do very often with those offensive lines in years past, that you can do now. But if you rattle him with pressure, he gets frustrated and he gets inaccurate. But these accuracy issues, obviously, they showed up a bit last year and now this year. It's just so glaring. And the weird thing is, aside from, you know, of course, his receiving core, you know, he's dealt with all kinds of receiving cores over the years, so you can't even put it on that. You know, aside from the offensive line issues, other than that, it's hard to find a real reason for what's going on with Brady, except I guess a year older, a step lost. That's the only thing that I could.
I don't know. I'm baffled.
It's so strange to me.
I try not to do too much discussion on the show of my personal fantasy exploits.
Right.
But I will mention the fact that I drafted Tom Brady this year in 7th or 8th round, and I thought he was going to be, you know, I didn't expect him to be anything spectacular. I thought he was just going to be
fine. Yeah, because if you look at the receiving core and everything,
exactly.
and Gronk not being 100% yet.
And I knew that they had shifted to be more of a balanced attack, running the ball more than they used to. But they used to throw it all over the place, and now they're running it a lot more, and they're doing it more effectively now.
Sure.
And I expected that. I expected, like I said, not spectacular numbers, but I expected something solid. And we've seen nothing even close to that this year. The offensive line's a sieve, like you mentioned. The running game's actually doing pretty well, and I certainly don't think he gets help from his receiving core. But at the same time, I'm not one that studies tape, that sits around and looks at these games.
But I mean, his accuracy is definitely his accuracy is markedly different. The way he's throwing the football.
That's what I was going to say, is that people that do study the tapes more and put the tapes on and break things down, you know, a lot of people are reporting that he's got, you know, very noticeable mechanical issues going on with his throwing motion. Potentially he's hurt. That's always a possibility, that there's like a buried injury that people aren't talking about. That's obviously could be used as a scapegoat too, but it's not.
Well, that could also get the Patriots in trouble if he's hurt, and that's not on the injury report.
That's the thing, is that
and usually the Patriots always have him on the injury report for years and years now. He's been on the injury report with a shoulder or a calf or something,
right.
For unknown reasons, Patriots reasons.
There's something there that's affecting his play, but I don't know. I mean, again, not to dwell on my fantasy team, but it was enough to make me switch to the aforementioned Blake Bortles.
Yeah, you dropped Tom Brady outright and picked
up. I dropped
up
Tom Brady for Blake Bortles.
Blake
Absolutely.
Bortles. That's where we're at right now, fantasy football wise, with Tom Brady. You know, the Patriots did win. They beat the Raiders on Sunday, but not by an impressive amount, 16-9. Definitely not the kind of outcome you would expect. You know, if you think about the New England Patriots offense with Tom Brady kind of in the abstract against the Raiders, you would think of something a little bit more high scoring.
Right.
Just if you're thinking about, you know, in the abstract, in a vacuum, Tom Brady, the Patriots offense. But this is a different Patriots offense, and it's a different Tom Brady. And
it's a new age.
Yeah, it's a new age, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what turn his career takes from here. Because obviously, you know, the Patriots
are... Unless there is, like, some sort of actual real contributing factor to this that gets resolved, that, you know, whatever this unknown thing is, if it is something that can be turned around and does, then, you know, potentially we'll see the old or maybe something closer to what we expected coming into the season.
Sure.
But, you know, absent that, yeah.
He might be transitioning into a caretaker quarterback on a run-heavy offense.
Right.
Which is crazy
to
think
about. It's
crazy
to think about, absolutely. For everything that guy's done and all the success he's had, all the stats that he's put up over the years, to think that
he could just lose it.
That he's now a game manager, you know? Just to think that, it's just, it feels weird.
It feels weird. let's talk about what many people think. I think the tide's shifting to the AFC North again this year, but what everybody thinks is the most competitive and scary division in the NFL, obviously the NFC West. We saw three of those four teams duking it out in two classic week three battles.
Mm-hmm.
Arizona defeating the San Francisco 49ers 23-14. Very excited about this Arizona Cardinals team. I'm very excited about how it doesn't seem to be a problem that they're going from Carson Palmer to Drew Stanton. I'm really excited about that defense. It's still playing really well. And then, of course, the Super Bowl rematch with the Seattle Seahawks hosting the Denver Broncos. That was a more thrilling game in certain aspects because it was a close game at the end than that Super Bowl win. Seattle did win 26-20 in overtime, but Seattle had a big lead, and Manning brought that team all the way back to tie it up and headed into overtime. So it was an interesting weekend for how things are starting to shape up in the NFC West. I mean, Arizona 3-0.
Yeah, obviously that matchup. I'm sure there was a number of people that were like, why couldn't we have got that in February?
Sure, sure. I mean, it was definitely a thrilling close game.
It was everything you expected. It was the good defense that Seattle plays.
A big Peyton Manning comeback.
They made some plays. There was definitely some Peyton Manning leading the offensive charge and breaking that defense down a little bit at the end and almost pulling things out. Mm-hmm. To the point, obviously, it went to overtime. It was a great matchup. Seattle pulled away, or they did their thing at the end like they were like you would expect them to do, I guess, being the better team I think they're a better team anyway, but certainly being the home team, they had taken things over there at the end and capped it off. But what a great game it was to watch. And
sure, absolutely.
Definitely what the Super Bowl wished they could have gotten out of those two teams.
But I will say, and we've talked about this before, that blowout, and I'm not a Denver hater, I enjoy watching Peyton Manning, whatever team he plays for. He's just fun to watch, to see him methodically break down defense after defense. But I really did enjoy that Super Bowl. I thought it was great just because it's incredible to see that defense up against Peyton Manning, and they're the ones who dismantled Peyton Manning. And so that's just something you don't see every day. And so that's why I kind of enjoyed that blowout Super Bowl more than I would,
I definitely kept my interest because
you couldn't believe it was happening.
Yeah, that was the thing. It was horrific shock at what was happening, what was playing on the field. There's been blowouts in the Super Bowl.
Oh yeah.
Before.
I mean, that was the hallmark of the Super Bowl until we got into the
2000s. Right. Yeah, you remember all those years.
Oh, yeah.
But there's been some particularly bad ones. But those were more, those seemed more like situations where, maybe a team, by default ended up winning their conference and having to play a team that was a lot better than them.
Sure.
And they kind of got blown out, where this was the greatest offense in the history of the league that just got shut down completely in the biggest game. There's obviously a host of reasons that got to there.
Right.
And I think what we saw this past week is probably a little closer to what should have played out. But obviously Seattle had things ready to go that Sunday back in February. So anyway, it was, definitely it was good to see those teams get back out there and then put on the kind of show that we all were expecting to see last winter. So the other one you were mentioning is that Arizona game. I want to mention one thing here. San Francisco was owning Chicago up until the fourth quarter of that game.
Right.
And they barely got out of they barely lost on Sunday in what was a really good game. And Arizona is a really good team.
They're a very good team.
They're formidable. They're someone to take seriously. And even with Drew Stanton running things over there. So, but I love how all the overreaction happens. It's like, oh, the Niners are 1-2. They're having all these problems, and I'm thinking like they're not. They're just not what they were. They're just not the same team.
They're just not, but they aren't what they were, and they're just not the same team. They don't have Navarro Bowman. They don't have Alden Smith right
they're
now.
They're still a good team. They're. It's not like you should just say that they're all of a sudden they're chopped liver.
Not saying they're chopped liver. I am, however, saying that they're not the team that they were last year or the year before, because especially with these two very important parts of their pass rush, of their defense, not being out there right now, that's major. I mean, those are two major guys.
I agree that those are major guys.
And plus, they're not even giving the ball to Frank Gore anymore.
I agree those are major guys. I agree that maybe they're not quite as good as they were last year with those guys, certainly. But I mean, they're again a dramatic comeback by the Bears and a last second I can't remember exactly how the game ended, but whatever happened at the end, they were close to winning both of those games from being 3-0, just like the Cardinals are. So I'm just saying, like, they're it's not like it's that monumental a shift to all of a sudden they're crap,
Well, yeah, but here's my question, okay? So they win one game, they lose two close games, but because this is the Niners and they went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago and it's a Harbaugh coach team or whatever, they're not crap. But then you look at a team like the Cleveland Browns, who are 1-2 and won one close game and lost two very close games, and then everybody can say that they're crap. So,
but that's obviously based on the history.
Yeah, but
and what's happened.
Recency bias. No, so I'm saying that there might be something to
I think the Browns are good.
Right, but I'm just saying that there might be something to this 49ers are not what they were thing. There's something to it. I think there's something to it.
There's potentially there's chinks in the armor there. Sure. And the fact that the point is we're three games in.
Right.
There's plenty of time left in this season.
Right.
I think they got tons
there's
of talent.
There's plenty of time left in the season. They do have a lot of talent. You know, recent history says that this team
should be able to write the ship.
Be all right.
Sure.
We'll see what happens when Aldon Smith and Navarro Bowman can make it back on the field. Hopefully Bowman can do that this season because he's easily their best defensive player at this point, and not having him out there has caused some problems for them. But we'll see. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. There's a lot of season left, but right now I'm skeptical.
It was a rough start.
I'm skeptical about the Niners and whether they can remain as competitive as they've been over the past couple
years. I'm just saying that, like, I still think the NFC West is that solid a division because, you know, Arizona, you know, they've continued a trajectory of looking better and better last
right.
year, and now they look pretty good.
And the Austin Davis Rams
Seattle
doesn't
is Seattle.
Look the Austin Davis Rams don't look so bad right now.
Yeah, the Rams they definitely have they still got a lot of guys and they have they have plenty of ability over there. We'll just have to see what they can do with their situation and how they can, you know, they were in a close game and they lost and
right.
they won a close game on the road the week before. You know, we'll have to see where they can go. They're obviously the most limited of the four. But I think, you know, Arizona's obviously good. Seattle, there's no question. But I think if anybody's out there saying that, you know, from what we've seen in the first 3 weeks, it's doom and gloom for the Niners. I think that's obviously a bit premature.
Right. I think there is a mini doom and a little gloom. That's what I'm going with for the 49ers right now. But I'm going
to
take a wait and see approach though, but if this stuff continues and it's week 6,
sure.
week 7, then I'm going to start making some serious proclamations.
If they only got one win through 6 weeks, then it's going to be a whole other story.
No, that's a whole other story. No, that means that they're screwed. And Jim Harbaugh's going to coach Michigan next year.
Nah.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast with our week 4 minute picks. So stay tuned.
Yes, it was. Doesn't matter who win and lose. Yes, it does. It ain't about the most blessed love. When you return to the essence, what is it back to the essence of? Greatness I wasn't in the presence of. Cause you was fake and never measured up. You just a nigga on this regular. But how far am I ahead of you?
And we're back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. And now that we've recapped week 3, we all know what time it is. It's time for our mini picks, our minute picks for week 4.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're a quarter of the way in the season already. Time flies when you're having fun and then also not fun because people like Roger Goodell, Ray Rice, and Adrian Peterson, and everybody ruins it. But there is football to be played, so let's get to it with Thursday night, tomorrow night on NFL Network and CBS. The New York Giants travel to Washington to take on the Kirk Cousins' show.
The Fighting Cousins.
You know, there's really no denying. I don't think that anybody would deny at this point that obviously the type of offense that Jay Gruden runs, that he prefers, his offense, is definitely more suited to a pocket-style passer like Kirk Cousins. And we saw the results of that last week. I think Washington's going to win this game. The New York Giants, I mean, they could. We've seen all kinds of weird things happen with them. Half a season good, half a season bad. I think they're still on that bad stretch of this season. Might stretch the whole season, but I'm going to go with Washington.
Yeah, the Giants finally got things going this past week. We kind of glossed over that, rightfully so.
I can't watch every game, brother.
But. Yeah, I think this is a tough match for them to go on the road to. Mainly the fact that Washington's defense, I think, is playing pretty well right now.
Better than we thought.
Certainly better than people expected. And that coupled with Cousins looking, you know, obviously pretty good last week, and giving the recent struggles we know the Giants can have or can show, I guess I'm going to go with Washington here. Although I wouldn't be surprised just because
it's the nature of that division.
It's the nature of that division, especially the nature of the Giants, you never know what you're going to get.
Next up, Green Bay Packers at the Chicago Bears. Green Bay, you know, that's another team. They scored seven points last week in that loss to the Lions. Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers, that's another quarterback that I'm kind of scratching my head about right now. They used to have, like, all kinds of multiple offensive looks. Now they're operating almost exclusively out of the shotgun. It's a less complicated, less unpredictable offense, and I'm curious as to why all that's happening. Chicago, you know, they've been fighting. They've been fighting to win games, and I think that I think they can fight and win this one. I like the Bears at home over Green Bay.
I think this obviously these two teams have a lot of history. It's a big rivalry. You know, they're both going to be focused. I'm questioning what is going on with Green Bay. I don't quite understand what's happening. I didn't watch every second of that game, although I should have. But I was watching 9 games at the same time, so it was tough to see every play. But I'm still kind of curious, you know, how it ended up quite like that, and what does that mean going into next week? Obviously, 1 week doesn't necessarily mean anything to the next, but this Bears team since that second half of the Niners game has kind of really turned things around. Corey Fuller's looking really good. Kyle Fuller is looking really good, and I think I like them to win this at home.
Up next, we have the Buffalo Bills at the Houston Texans. These teams, to me, both of them kind of hard to figure out. You know, we got Buffalo. They finally had their first loss last week when they were against San Diego, only scored 10 points, whereas Houston, you know, they lost 30-17 to the New York Giants. So to me, I feel like Buffalo is getting back to its normal level, and Houston is still among some of the worst in the NFL right now. I do like the home team here, though. I'm going with Houston because I'm feeling good about J.J. Watt dealing with like E.J. Manuel and stuff. I like that. So
yeah, I definitely like Houston here. I think maybe the Bills played a little bit above their heads the first couple of weeks, and
sure,
we saw them come back to earth last week a little bit against the Chargers, who, by all accounts, are a pretty solid team this year, if not trending like good, and especially for that division. I mean, outside of the Broncos, obviously, but I think Houston at home. Their defense is played pretty well. They had a tough assignment, I think, playing a hungry Giants team last week.
Oh, absolutely.
And or a desperate Giants team, we'll say. And so I think I like the Texans here.
Next up, Tennessee Titans at Indianapolis Colts. Titans got whooped last week by the Cincinnati Bengals, and rightfully they should. I mean, the Bengals are one of the best teams in the NFL, if not the best. I might have a little bit of bias. You know,
it's worth an argument,
but you know, when they're out talented and outclassed like that, I don't see Tennessee standing up. You know, Indianapolis obviously has some issues with protection. They have issues running the ball, but I really like them being at home with Andrew Luck, and I think that, you know, I don't think Tennessee's going to roll over and die for them by any means, and I think that we could end up having some fourth quarter Andrew Luck stuff in this game. But I'm going to go with Indy. I just don't see Tennessee going on the road and getting this one.
Yeah, speaking of teams that played over their heads in the very beginning of the season, Titans beating the Chiefs in Kansas City right now just kind of looks amazing. As amazing as I thought it was after it happened, because I certainly didn't expect that to happen beforehand. So I think that Indy's clearly the better team here. They're at home, right?
Indianapolis is at home.
Yeah. With Indy at home, this is just too tough a matchup for the Titans.
Next up, Carolina Panthers at the Baltimore Ravens. Obviously, the big storyline here, of course, is Steve Smith facing his former team. But the real story here, to me, is the Baltimore run game and Cam Newton's rib injury. You know, we saw in that Steelers game last week, Cam Newton obviously not comfortable. He's not going to be able to run. He's not comfortable throwing the football. Not a lot of people to throw the football to. Last week he was, last week he didn't even have Jericho Cotchery on the field. And the Steelers ran for 264 yards against a Carolina defense that was giving up less than 90 yards to the run game last year. I think Baltimore can control the pace of this. They're at home. I think the Ravens get this win.
I definitely don't think the Panthers defense is what we saw last Sunday.
No,
That was definitely an aberration.
But I don't think it's what we saw last year necessarily either.
But I don't know. Maybe there is a crack in that one. I'm not sure.
It's Captain Munnerlyn. They lost Captain Munnerlyn.
This is definitely an interesting matchup. The Baltimore's always a solid team, and it's like you said, they've had some challenges early this season. They lost Pitta, but we'll see how they rebound against a Panthers team that really is going to be trying to bounce back from that. I think they do, but I don't know that it's enough to beat Baltimore on the road.
Next up, Detroit Lions at the New York Jets. I'm going with the Detroit Lions here, even though I think that there's a potential for the Lions to Lions on the road here. I'm going with Detroit because I think that what the Jets are going to try to do defensively is stack the box against Joique Bell and Reggie Bush, and then they're really weak in the secondary, especially at corner, and I think that it's just going to open up throwing all day long for Matthew Stafford. So that's why I'm going Detroit.
But, you know, you've definitely known me too long if you're using Lions as a verb. I'll just jump out of the box here and say I'm taking the Lions, although I feel terribly uncomfortable about it. And it's their ability to shoot themselves in the foot that they've done since I was a child. I think the Jets will play strong. It's in New York. That's the main reason I'm uncomfortable about it. The Lions on the road over how many years they've had a terrible, I don't know the numbers, but they've got a terrible record on the road over so many years. It did kind of okay, a little bit better over the last 5 years, I'd say, on the road, but historically on the road they're not good, and we've seen them collapse on the road a number of times. Although I'm starting to feel that maybe Jim Caldwell is settling in a little bit,
right,
especially after last week. I thought they played a very solid game.
Clean game.
A very clean and solid game. Maybe that's going to continue.
But this is in New York against the Jets, so who knows?
Who knows?
Somebody might butt fumble.
I'll take the Lions, I guess.
Next up, Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Pittsburgh Steelers. As I mentioned earlier, the Steelers ran for 264 yards against the Carolina Panthers last week. Le'Veon Bell with 147, LeGarrette Blount with 118 rushing yards. They each had a really long run, Bell of 81, Blount of 50. But even if you take away those 131 yards, that's 133 rushing yards. I expect more of the same. I think that the Steelers will be more than capable of establishing a lead and then protecting it with a run against Tampa Bay, the hapless Buccaneers on the road in Heinz Field. Steelers all day.
Yeah, this is one of those games that I don't see how Tampa's got a chance. But it's the NFL.
But you never know. The Steelers have had colossal
too.
Mistakes before. Sure,
sure, sure, they can do that thing. But I'm certainly not willing to call it here. I think this is just a terrible position for Tampa. Coming off a huge loss. You want to say that they're going to fight back and bounce back after that and put a better performance together. But even if they do, this is such a tough situation going to Pittsburgh. You got a young quarterback going against Dick LeBeau.
That's always a recipe for disaster
always,
for a quarterback.
Bad. Yeah. I think this one is, as I felt about a couple games last week, this is one of the ones that I think sticks out as being probably the biggest lopsided match.
The other thing too with this game is I have very little faith in the Tampa Bay offense. The Steelers are without three defensive starters right now.
Mm-hmm.
Ike Taylor broke his arm; he's out indefinitely. Ryan Shazier has a knee contusion; he's not playing this week. He might be back in week 5. And
Jarvis Jones.
Yeah, Jarvis Jones had wrist surgery, and he's on the IR recall list. They brought James Harrison back this week. So with a better offense, I might think that these defensive injuries might impact the Steelers, but I just don't see Tampa Bay being able to do much to even take advantage of these injuries,
yeah,
to be honest. Next up, Miami Dolphins at the Oakland Raiders. You know, there's a little bit of controversy, manufactured or not. It's hard to tell about Ryan Tannehill potentially being pulled from the starting job for the Dolphins, which would be crazy. I'm not going to go into it now, but it would be crazy to do that. But I'm still going with Oakland here. Miami's traveling to the West Coast to play a noon game, which, oh, wait, no, this is in England. That's why it's at 1 p.m., but it's at Oakland. This is in England. I'm going to go with Oakland because this is just one of those games that Oakland's going to win in London. Why not? But, yeah,
weird things happen over there, right?
Weird things happen over there. I'm going to go with Oakland.
I mean, of course, God, if there's anything that's damning about this NFL's push to put more games over in England, it's like
games are terrible.
Some of the matchups,
just terrible.
Miami at Oakland in London just makes zero sense to me. But,
yeah.
God, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a crapshoot. Well, this thing won't turn off now. I guess I don't know. I half think this is a crapshoot, but I think Miami's the better team. I'll go with Miami. I think they're the better team.
All right. Honestly, I think Miami's the better team too, but I'm saying Oakland's going to win it.
I have no clue.
Next up, with the three games at the 4 o'clock hour, starting with Jacksonville Jaguars at San Diego Chargers. I expect better things. More like you were saying, a little bit more excitement, a little bit more faster pace when you've got Blake Bortles at quarterback for Jacksonville. But it's Jacksonville at San Diego, and Phillip Rivers is playing extremely well and all of this. And I don't even without Danny Woodhead, who's lost for the season with that ankle and fibula fracture. I'm still going San Diego. I don't see why not.
Yeah, this one's tough to call for Jacksonville. This is a tough matchup for them. Obviously, as we said earlier, San Diego looks pretty solid. They're probably one of the stronger teams in the AFC right now.
Absolutely.
And the Jaguars have looked nothing short of an abomination since the first half against Philly in Week One. And I spoke praise for Bortles earlier. I think that maybe we'll see more out of them, more life out of their offense. They're still having a hard time running the ball in general. And I think San Diego's a pretty balanced team. They're pretty good on both sides of the ball. This is pretty tough to call for Jacksonville. I'm going with the Chargers on this. Although I'm still calling for Bortles to look pretty decent.
All right. Next up, we have
garbage time or otherwise.
Next up, we have Atlanta Falcons at the Minnesota Vikings. Obviously, this is the
weird
Teddy
game.
Bridgewater starting debut for the Vikings. I'm really curious to see how that pans out. I'm curious to see what kind of game planning Atlanta is going to do for a quarterback that doesn't have a lot on tape. But ultimately, you know, whatever Teddy Bridgewater is going to become, or whatever that Vikings offense is going to become, it's not going to be the peer of Atlanta's. Obviously, that Vikings defense, as we said, is getting better, but it's not at that true Mike Zimmer level yet. It's not going to be a time to stop Matt Ryan. I'm going with Atlanta.
I think this is a really weird game.
It's weird, though, because it's outside. It's not going to be cold.
It's
so who
the
cares?
Vikings at home, but they're not really at home. They're at the Gopher Stadium.
Right.
It's Atlanta coming off a huge victory and going against this team who looks, again, like we said earlier, like they might have a pretty solid defense at least.
If they're getting there, they're on their way, I'll say. Yeah, sure.
And they're definitely turning things around defensively. Their offense is still a work in progress. I'm going to take the Falcons here, but I think it's going to be a lot closer game than a lot of people might say.
So maybe like those scores those NFL Network guys were putting out there for the Atlanta-Tampa Bay game.
Right, yeah.
Like 3-point, 4-point win.
I could see it being a close game, absolutely. I think that Minnesota is going to give them a run.
Philadelphia Eagles are at the San Francisco 49ers. I picked San Francisco with my Bleacher Report picks, and I'm going to stick by that. But now I'm starting to feel a little bit like Philadelphia is going to find a way to take advantage of that slightly weakened upfront Niners defense. But I'm going with San Francisco here because they really need to bounce back. They need to have a good showing at home. They haven't had that yet. And so, you know, I think that they're all in for this game. But part of me wants to change my pick to Philadelphia, to be honest. I think that Philadelphia might go in there with that offense and really put San Francisco on their heels. But for the sake of the picks that I made for Bleacher Report earlier this week, it's San Francisco.
I definitely think Philly's going to come in and do things with their offense. And, you know, regardless of that defense will make some plays, I'm sure. But I like Philly to come in and score. Absolutely. I think the Niners are going to score more. I think the Niners are too desperate right now. They're tired of everybody talking about the last two losses that they've had. They're getting a high profile opponent coming to their house, and they lost the only game that they've played there this year.
Right.
Which is the only game they've played there. And right. So they're ready to right that ship and get a win at home.
Sunday night football, New Orleans Saints travel to Dallas to take on the Cowboys in Jerry Land. Obviously, New Orleans is a different team on the road than at home, but Jerry Land's kind of a dome-ish environment. Dallas's defense is still pretty icky. I mean, you look at what the Rams' offense, which, you know, we all thought the Rams didn't have an offense, and what they did to the Cowboys in that close loss last week. I am going with the Saints.
Can I take the over?
Right? I wouldn't be surprised if there was a shootout happening here, which means another opportunity for Romo to fritter away a win.
That's kind of where, I mean, I guess if I have to be too...
I'm sorry about the lazy Romo narrative, you guys, but sometimes you just got to do it.
It might be a lazy Romo narrative, but it might be warranted as well.
Sure.
I mean, it's going to be a Sunday night game, a high-profile primetime game. You got a big opponent coming in. That's got more than a competent offense, and you have that patchwork of defense that they have out there in Dallas. I definitely see a shootout here with lots of points, and of course, you know how this NFL works. It'll be 6-9 or 9-6, I should say.
Finally,
I'll take the Saints.
Okay. And then finally, Monday Night Football: New England Patriots are at the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh man.
Last week the Chiefs beat Miami 34-15. As we talked about earlier, the New England Patriots didn't look so Patriots-y with their 16 points, but they did get a win over Oakland. I think obviously on the national stage is where the Patriots shine. We see it time and time again. It's true that Arrowhead's a tough place to play and all of these things, But I can't turn my back yet. I'm going with the Patriots.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna have to disagree with you there.
Oh hey.
I
Chiefs, huh?
The Chiefs are. I think we all thought coming into the season that the Chiefs were a pretty solid team, like we saw them last year.
Right.
They lost to Tennessee out of the gate, and everybody was like, "Whoa, wait, what?" But then they went to Denver. And lost in what I would consider a solid performance against a clearly better opponent on the road. And then they took care of business last week in Miami, and Miami's a solid team. I think that they're a pretty solid team, at least average. But you know, average team, when you're playing them on the road, it's still going to be tough. So the Chiefs are going to be at home. They're playing someone they're going to be really up for in the Patriots, obviously. And we've seen the Patriots struggle, and I think that I think we're going to continue to see that. Although I will say, as much as I'm picking the Chiefs here, due to the fact that I dropped Tom Brady, I'm expecting him to blow up. So I'll throw that caveat in there.
Right. That's exactly what's going to happen. This is all about the ruining of your fantasy football season. It has nothing to do with Tom Brady and his arm or anything.
Well, that's why my official pick is the Chiefs. So.
Well, there you go. Make yourself feel better about dropping Tom Brady for a Jaguars rookie quarterback. This is the world we're in now.
I think I might be the only person out there. If there's anybody else out there that knows of anybody that dropped Tom Brady for for Blake Bortles.
Please let us know.
Please let us
seriously.
Know. Seriously.
Let us know.
I've told a couple people, and they're just like, you got to be the only person that's ever that has done that. So.
All right. So those are our minute picks for week four.
Yes. And
enjoy them.
There's another podcast in the books.
Yes.
Just
about. We'll be right back after this break, and we're going to send it on home.
All right.
Here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. And we're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and we're about to wrap things up, which means it's time to read from the Little Giant Book of Football Facts. Again, please, if
is it
any
really
of these facts...
Is it called the Little Giant Book?
It's a Little Giant Book.
Oh, okay. So that's like the brand or whatever.
Right, the imprint.
Okay.
So this is where we're going to read some facts from this book that I got for $1 at the Everything $5 or Less store. And if you, any of you out there... find any discrepancies between the truth and what I'm reading you, please let us know.
And you will be bestowed with fame.
With fame and handsomely rewarded in some manner that we haven't determined yet, because we haven't heard from anybody. So we can either only assume that none of y'all are paying attention or fact-checking, or none of y'all are listening to this, or this book is shockingly more correct than I thought. So without further ado, here are four facts about kicking.
Potential facts.
Kicker Mike Prindle of Western Michigan kicked 7 field goals in a 42-7 win over college rival Marshall on September 29, 1984.
Aha, Broncos.
Yes. Roman Anderson of Houston kicked 70 field goals and 213 point afters for a total of 423 points during his collegiate career, which lasted from 1988 to 1991.
So these aren't even, this isn't just kickers. These are college kickers.
No, these are just two.
Oh, all right,
those just happen to be two college kicking facts. Next up, Adam Vinatieri of the New England Patriots was the kicker selected to the 2002 All-NFL team.
Okay.
And finally, this is the kind of fact that I don't know if anybody out there watches How I Met Your Mother, but this is a fact that would make Marshall Erickson so sad. In 1998, Gary Anderson of the Minnesota Vikings made 35 of 35. Actually, it says or. It's a typo. 35 or 35.
35.
I think they mean of.
They're not sure.
Made 35 or 35 attempted field goals during the NFL season. So he was, in 1998, in the regular season, he was at least a perfect 35 and 35.
Yeah, he was amazing that regular season.
Sorry, Marshall. So those are our little facts from our football fact book for you. This week.
It's just funny that, you know, of all the football facts to read, we're reading facts about kickers.
Well, I just opened it to a random page, I opened to another page, and it was just all college stats, and I'm like, I don't care.
I'm not complaining. It's just funny. People barely care about kickers as it is, you know.
Right.
Much less facts about them.
Well, 35. He made 35 or 35 attempts.
Or 35.
So with that, that wraps up this week's edition of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hankst. I'm the AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com. You can find me by searching me on the Google machine or going to BleacherReport.com or downloading the TeamStream app, which you should totally do. It's actually a really wonderful sports app, and I would rely on it heavily even if I wasn't employed by the company.
It interrupts me pleasantly during my work day.
Oh, sure, yeah. It's pleasant interruptions. It's good to wake up and just have it all, what happened overnight? Okay, cool. So I can also be found at profootballfocus.com. I'm a Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I write about some deep league waiver wire gems on a weekly basis that you can find. You just got to sign up for Pro Football Focus Fantasy Gold to see it, and you should. I should probably pay more attention to all this stuff on Fantasy Gold because I'm 0-3 in my league, in my redraft league. But I'm really good at picking the deep league gems, so you should listen to me.
Absolutely.
And you can also find me on Twitter at @FBall_Andrea, at @FBALL_Andrea.
And I'm Brian, and I'm less locatable. And I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
All right, so that wraps up week four, the week four picks, week three recap.
Yes.
Of the F-Ball NFL podcast for this week. We'll be back next week to talk about, you know, football.
Things that have happened.
We'll talk about the national. Yeah, we're going to talk about the National Football League. So.
And things that will happen shortly thereafter.
Yeah. So stay tuned for next week's F-Ball NFL podcast where we discuss some more NFL football. Until then, enjoy the games. I wish you all great luck and with your fantasy football teams if you all do that. And we'll be with you next Wednesday.
Absolutely.
Peace.
Later.
Play chicken when I'm driving them crazy. Get head in the wing, thigh, breast, a drumstick. We like, we like, we like, we like.